CliffCentral.com.
All right. It is a Tuesday morning. Our surprise guest this morning, I was thrilled when he walked in, is none other than Jason Goliath.
Not thrilled anymore.
No, what do you mean? I'm delighted.
It is what it is.
So we've got to talk about something that's in the news, and it always comes up, and I still don't understand why this is a thing. But there are new smoking laws in South Africa, and I remember this being a thing in the 90s with Nkosasana Dlamini Zuma was then the Minister of Health, and she banned cigarettes in public places, restaurants, all the rest of it. I mean, smokers really are second-class citizens in many ways.
We are lepers.
Are you a smoker?
Okay, and we are treated like lepers. We are the modern-day lepers of society.
Well, I'll tell you something. I'm a non-smoker, but I've always been on your guys' side. Mm. Always, because I grew up in a house where both my parents smoked. Yeah. They still do. For a while, my sister smoked. She stopped. But I have never, ever smoked a cigarette.
Don't.
And I don't know. I don't like the smell of it or anything. But you have the right to have whatever you want. It's like I support people smoking weed if they want to smoke weed.
Absolutely.
Whatever you want to do. And I think that there's somebody has a real problem somewhere in this system.
What's
a real problem
rule?
With smokers. So here we go. The Portfolio Committee on Health has conducted more public hearings on the new Tobacco Products and Electronic Delivery Systems Control Bill. So it has been met with both support and vehement opposition, depending on the clause being focused on. Broadly, the bill aims to introduce the following. One, indoor public places and certain outdoor areas will be determined to be 100% smoke-free. But I thought that was already a thing.
Yeah.
So yeah. When you, like in the middle of winter, if you want to have a ciggy, you have to go outside into the freezing cold.
Yep.
You have to have your ciggy there like a homeless guy, shaking and shivering, and smoking it down to the last coal, and then you come back in and you're like,
yeah, and then you need another cigarette from the stress of smoking a cigarette,
And people look at you funny.
So,
I thought that was already a thing, but there we go. Now there's 100% smoke-free. Second of all, the sale of cigarettes through vending machines they want to ban.
Yeah. Why?
Because they obviously think they think kids are going up to the vending machines and buying them. I mean, I used to buy my parents' cigarettes.
I haven't seen a vending machine in a space that doesn't already have an age restriction. So it's generally bars, late night establishments. So
it seems like an easy one for them to fine you for, right? 100%. If you have a vending machine in a place where kids can get it. So I don't know what that is. Plain packaging with graphic health warnings and pictorials. This is not going to stop a smoker.
No, we don't care.
You don't give a shit. They could put.
We don't care.
Decapitated.
It ends up just becoming like Top Trump. So then the three of us are smokers. Now I've got a lung. Then you say, I raise your lung with a rotten testicle. And then you go, you think that is bad? This person coughed out the lung and farted a kidney at the same time. Then it's Top Trump. That's the only thing it does. It doesn't slow us down. That thing. It's a game for us.
So that's nonsense.
Yeah.
Ban on display at point of sale. So now.
Yeah, that's been coming for a while.
Okay, so why? Because they think you don't know what brand you want?
They think it encourages us to buy.
Yeah.
It's not going to change. You're not going to change your brand because they don't put the colors or the logo there.
No, they just don't put the cigarettes out there. Yeah, they'll be under the counter.
You know,
anytime branding mattered was during lockdown when you had to smoke that Zimbabwean stuff.
So I think the branding in public places is to not give kids ideas.
But kids are vaping.
No, I know.
Yeah,
but
this is the next part, right?
We've got let's talk about vapes. I can at least attack somebody because I'm feeling attacked.
Okay, so yeah, but I'm on your side here. Like, you're an adult, you can decide to do whatever you want. You're not going to be put off by the removal of advertising or the addition of ugly pictures. It's very patronizing, actually, that they treat you like this, like you're some kind of fool who needs to, you know, be persuaded out of a habit that you've chosen for yourself.
Yeah.
It's different with kids, and I get that.
But
at the same time, if a kid is going to be peer pressured in smoking, there's no amount of advertising that's going to dissuade them. No amount of anything that's going to put them off.
I think that the more underground you make it, the more enticing you make it for them.
It's a sexy
You know what I mean? 100%. Yeah. So now instead of a kid asking for something that's openly displayed, they're saying, hey, what do you have under your counter there?
And,
you know what I mean?
And when they used to allow cigarette advertising, then a large portion of the profits from selling cigarettes would go into the economy to bring concerts 100%. Or like sports events
or pay comedians.
Yeah, correct. Pay comedians. Now, what have we done with that money? Now it's going underground.
Yeah, but I think they made all their money during the lockdown. I think all of those, you know, there was the Nkosi Zuma and what is that, Gold Leaf Braz. Yeah, just like
that's it. All right, but let's go to vaping because that's also part of this legislation. They're trying to get people to stop vaping. I mean, and we know that kids are doing this.
Yeah.
In much greater numbers than ever before. It came up last week with Aspasia. I see lots of people vaping. Also, they vape all over the place.
Yeah.
Because cigarette smoking.
Now, that's where cigarette smokers, I think, have a lot of respect. A cigarette smoker is generally going to try and even be downwind, even if we are in a public place. It's about, so for me, do whatever you want.
It's like a public farter. A public farter always tries to be downwind.
But a vapor that blows his vape internally, then I'm like, oh, my man, I don't smoke for the smell of berries. Yeah. You know what I mean? Now, it's not even 9 o'clock. I'm panting and I'm also intermittent fasting. Now I'm smelling berries. And also, you're not a ninja. You can't disappear. You know what I mean?
So, have you seen how they try to do it? They like try to...
There's no way to look cool. Once you're over 30, there's no way to look cool doing it.
Mm-mm.
But my issue is this, and I'll say this. What I like about smoking is smokers know this thing is going to kill us. All right? We are very clear. We make a decision. People that vape are not aware of what the consequences are.
Yeah.
Then that's my thing. Is it's now you're doing a mystery drug now. There's not enough research and information. So I go, smokers, 100% proven that thing's going to kill you. 100%.
But then also humans have been lighting things on fire and inhaling the smoke for hundreds, if not thousands, if not millions of years.
Because every now and then you light something lekker.
Yeah.
Every now and then.
Like a lot of people have died to bring us these advances.
I appreciate
but we don't know about this shit in these electronic cigarettes. We don't know what's burning where and what chemicals are being created.
So when you start doing the research and you figure out like just one of the side effects of vaping, for example, like popcorn lung, this irreversible disorder, then when you dig a bit deeper and you understand how you don't think about it because you don't know who's mixing your stuff.
No.
So then for me, I'm like, okay, if you're going to buy a vape, buy from a big tobacco company. You know why you want to buy from a big tobacco company? Because they've been sued many, many times for their other products. So they know what they can and can't put in to get around the court system. And somehow that helps your body.
You can't buy from a fly-by-night.
You buy a fly-by-night that was using AMC pots in the back room to cook your stuff. You know what I mean? He's throwing things that you don't understand in there. I'm saying don't buy vape from somebody who doesn't have lawyers on retainer. I think that's the easiest way to get through this. If somebody doesn't have lawyers on retainer, what are you doing?
Yeah, so Elvis says here, it's funny that NDZ hates smokers and smoking, yet her family was the sole distributor of illegal cigarettes during the lockdown.
Exactly.
In comparison, says K&A, how do you feel about marking high sugar content with a sugar warning? It's the same thing, just replaces the overweight for the smokers. But again, I know when I'm eating sweets, it's not going to make, it's going to make 100%. Me fat and it's not good for me.
Absolutely.
I know that. Just like I know.
Make you fat and happy.
No. My decision to not smoke has nothing to do with the health implications. Nothing.
No.
Just like your decision to smoke. You say you're buying into the whole thing that you're going to die. It's going to kill you.
100%.
Right? And there are, listen, having said that, there are people who've smoked their whole life and they only die when they stop.
Yes.
Because it's a shock to the system. The system's used to all that
smoking.
Absolutely. So, I mean, what are you on? How many a day? Or is it just a social smoking thing?
Nah, but I'm a pack a day. I'm
not really,
eh? And I'm also like, you know, I think
that's
that,
not that. Is that a lot?
I think a pack a day is the average in terms of people who say I'm a smoker.
All right.
So half to a pack a day.
Because he was quite judgy now when you said a pack a day.
These Bonfries, this is a vapor. This.
I don't touch the stuff.
Yeah, but you got
asthma or something, features. Don't you?
No.
You've got lots of problems. He's got major health problems. This guy's basically fragile.
Oh, so you're starting to save your own life. It's now you're acting clever for us.
You could be onto something there, Mr. Goliath.
You don't smoke at all?
I don't smoke at all. Don't touch the stuff. Nothing in my lungs.
So don't smoke. If you don't have to smoke, don't smoke. And if you do smoke, you understand why I smoke and enjoy your life.
I watch
my,
Soul Buddies.
My question
guys.
Has become when people judge me too harshly, I go, whoa, whoa, whoa. So you're saying if I stop smoking, I'm not going to die?
No.
And then they go, no, that's not what I'm saying. Then I say, well, then get away from me.
And you choose your poison.
Get away from me, 100%.
Right. I mean, like your poison could be that you rally drive cars or you drag race or. You eat sweets. That could be your poison.
100%. Or you could
gamble.
No poisons, and you're consuming poisons anyway. How many people do you know? You know how many men I've heard of, late 30s, early 40s, that have just dropped, that have just gone?
Yeah.
Then my question becomes, you know, for me personally, and this is about me, is at the end of my life, when I'm asked the questions, did you have a good time? Do I want to have craved a cigarette every single day and still be dead? Or do I want to have satisfied that need and still be dead? So then it's personal choice. And as long as my smoking is not impacting you, you're not paying for it, I'm not breathing it near you, then relax.
And you bring so much happiness to all the rest of us.
Come on. So I need a guide to fuel that. So
you know, if that's what you need, you know, really, I don't understand why anyone stops people like you who are performing a public service in effect. I mean, it's a public service we should be paying for.
Thank you.
And I really think you could charge more because what you're doing is keeping the nation happy. And that's a tough job. Especially when everyone else is doing the opposite.
And especially when there's so many reasons to not be happy.
Right. So I think if you want your pack a day, you go.
Ah, donkey.
Who the hell are these people trying to make laws to make it more difficult for you and more complicated for you?
So I'm over it. I'm like, in my mind, my silver lining is those laws are to stop the lighties from getting into it. And then I'm going, yeah, okay, the lighties will find something else.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's healthier than cigarettes. But I think that humans are always going to find a vice. We're always going to find a vice. And then I go, better the vice we know than the vice we don't.
And sometimes it's also just a coping mechanism because it's not so much that you've chosen to do a thing that you know is bad for you. Nobody does that logically.
Yeah.
You do it because it's a pressure release.
How many
people in this country are functional alcoholics because they work hard and then at the end of the week or every night when they get home,
check out.
They just need a Rachmacher.
It's linked to the breathing. I'm not an exerciser, which means I don't breathe deeply if I'm not smoking. Then smoking helps me breathe deeply a couple of times a day. Smoking helps me take a break from stuff that I'm doing. I don't work in a structured environment where my breaks are scheduled. So I can go on all day about the pros for me.
Yeah.
Do I advise anybody to start smoking? No.
And also the government mustn't make these rules against smokers when they take such a lot of the money off a pack for tax.
Exactly.
If you're going to tax people, don't admonish
them.
Yeah. That's
just rude.
Praise
us. If you're going to take money, how much of a packet of cigarettes is taxed? It's a lot, right?
A lot.
They mustn't then also shit on you for it.
You know what's funny?
You can't take the ill-gotten gains of something that you've
created. They're going to implement these rules on smoking, and then they're going to use the smoking money to implement these
exactly.
rules.
Exactly.
You see?
It's perverse.
We pay for our own handcuffs.
There we go. You
pay for your own handcuffs.
It's not fair, guys. It's not fair.
While we're on that, I mean, I think a lot of South Africans also don't know, and maybe this is something that because you've seen so many audiences over time, you've run venues, you've been in the public thing for such a long time. Do you think South Africans know what to do if we don't have a drink? Because a lot of South Africans don't know how to entertain themselves without a drink.
Yo, bro, I think that's a major problem. I think South Africans don't know what to do if there's not a drink, and I hope we never find out.
We did.
Very lucky. So sad. It'll be so depressing. Because I often think one of the ways we bond is like, let's have a drink together. That's like the first thing. If you really want to get to know someone or you want to be friends with someone, you say, let's have a drink together.
It does break the inhibitions. You know what I mean? It lowers all sorts of barriers. It lowers all sorts of preconceptions.
Yep.
And is a beautiful social lubricant. But we over-lubricate sometimes. That's the problem. No one wants to over-lubricate.
No.
You just need the right amount
slippery.
You need traction. Just, you know what I mean? Drifter. You know what I mean? Come on, drifter.
So Vyasin says, I love smoking, but it is the only regret I have in my life. Sure.
Oh, excuse me.
It's a guy who knows himself.
You are a blessed and lucky person. If the only regret you have is smoking, your silver lining is you've done well in your life. Well done. Right. And I think that smoking has caused you to not have other regrets. So be grateful for your smoking. Otherwise, imagine the regrets you might have if you didn't have that guai.
Tabo Pali says, according to scientists, vapes shrink your balls and your penis.
That's Tabo, why, are you scientists, why are you googling shrunken penis, Tabo? Is there something you want to tell us?
Shrunken.
Why is your algorithm spitting out info about shrinking peepee? Tabo, you are letting other Tabos down. You are letting other Tabos down. Tabo, what's Tabo?
Where is the evidence, yeah, Tabo?
I'm sure Pali means shrinking something in some language somewhere. Tabo Pali? Then it's, oh, no, 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 Tabo. Oh, no, 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 Tabo.
So Australia is a place where they love rules. They've been doing all this stuff since the dawn of time. But they were the first to put those ugly pictures on the cigarettes. Mm.
And they made it that ugly color, remember?
And it's expensive there, apparently. I haven't been. I'm not interested in going. But apparently it's like 10 times.
I'm also not interested in going here.
Not.
I have to tell you, I'm not interested in Australia at all.
Not at all.
I don't think it's a place for human society.
You know, as a person of color, I've said this in a number of times. If you want to feel black, leave South Africa.
Really? You think so?
Leave South Africa.
But like there's some countries that are worse than others.
I'm saying that for me, what I love about us is we speak about racial tension. We speak about...
Again, it's a pressure release. Because we've learned the hard way.
And we address it. And also I always use this example. Robbie Collins tells this amazing story. And I always tell people, like, you find diversity in the major cities. So Paris, New York. But you travel outside of those cities, there's no diversity. Yeah. So Robbie Collins, and he's in and out of the States a lot. That's where he wants to play. But he tells a story of his on stage, 100% white audience, and in the middle of his set, somebody just goes, "Shut the fuck up, nigga." And then in South Africa, it doesn't matter what the complexion of the audience is. If somebody used the K word directed towards the stage, I wouldn't have to do a thing as the comedian. No, I would just wait and
the
audience would finish them. What happened there is the show continued, my friend. There was no slowing down. There was no, "Hey, I can't believe you said that." The whole audience basically.
You think they do that in Australia?
Of course.
You think so?
I think
Australians are politically correct.
Maybe not in the. I've got family that live in Australia. I've got Australia, New Zealand, and I've got comedians who have traveled, and they will let you know how you kind of feel. So for me, there's not a restaurant in the country where I walk in at the moment and don't feel welcome.
No.
You know what I mean? I drove past the Saxon just now on my way here, and I'm in and out of the Saxon, and I never pull up at the Saxon and have somebody look at me as if to say, "Can you realize where you are? Can you afford
I think that's something
we can be
very proud of that in this country. I don't think that anyone, there used to be a time where I used to think, you know, if you walked into a dealership and you weren't dressed and you wanted to buy
the 90s was like that.
They would have looked at you first.
Yes.
I don't think that happens anymore.
Now, you walk in with shorts, it sends off alarms that guy's money in disguise. Yes. Now that's a good sale.
Because they hide it now, right? Yeah. So Australia have lots of time on their hands. They've got lots and lots of rules. An Australian man went surfing with his pet python. So he didn't have his tackle hanging out of his pants.
Yeah.
He went with his actual python. It got him a fine, not much short of 30,000 rand, but in Aussie dollars. Queensland Environment Department said you can't take your snake into the sea unless it's a sea snake.
Mate, what are you doing, mate?
They've actually got – no, but this is maddening to me. I mean, that they have sat in a session of the Queensland government, the provincial government of Queensland, they had a session where they actually had people – take part in a vote. All right. I don't mind if it's a sea snake, but I've got a major problem if someone's going to go in there without a sea snake and it's a land snake. I don't like it. We've got to find them.
That's how land snakes end up taking over the sea. That's how it happens.
What's the thinking there? That's insanity.
You know, one of the greatest pieces of advice I ever got, I was playing in one of these celebrity golf days. I don't know, Gareth, if I ever told you this story. Playing in one of these celebrity golf days. I can't play golf, but sometimes I get invited just to be part of a four ball to encourage companies to play. End up sharing a cart with a bra who is an honest-to-God merchant of war, an arms dealer.
Wow.
Proper. Wow. So the O is South African, late 50s, proper wealthy. Sells to most of the governments in Africa, most in Europe. Biggest client is Australia. Doesn't sell to the South African government because he'd have to do the BEE thing. And he goes, "I make enough money." And also, every now and then they have to buy from him anyway because he's got the contracts for the Southern Hemisphere. That type of vibe, right? So eventually I'm talking to this, I hear about how rich he is. Eventually I say to him, "So, if you're not making money here in South Africa, why are you not living in Australia or Europe? Because you got the type of bucks where you can live a lifestyle here or there. And the guy gave me the best answer ever in terms of bolstering my pride for South Africa. He said, because I know myself. I said, what does that mean? He said, you see, my boy, if you're going to, he said, I like first world things, but I really enjoy third world thinking. I said, yo, you got to clarify that for me. And then he said, you see, in Australia, when you get pulled off for speeding, you get a fine or you go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
In South Africa, when you get pulled off for speeding, there's that small window period where we can just have a conversation about what actually happened and how do we really feel.
Yes.
And he said to me, that is why I will never leave South Africa. Because what South Africans don't realize is we enjoy the benefits of the first world. Where are we sitting right now? First world deluxe.
Absolutely.
But some of that third world thinking, because too much rules maketh for no fun.
Absolutely. It's one of the reasons I love being here.
That's
too.
Why, even me.
It's not worth, I mean, really, if you can avoid unpleasantness.
Yes. And those privileges are only reserved for the super rich in first world. So the super rich avoid those.
Yeah, you can get away with
super rich is a clipper, Papa. Come on.
Mary, where you can talk.
Mary Mulema in the comments says, Jason, you are good looking, my friend. I think she's hitting on you.
Mary, I receive. I was wondering why my wedding ring was vibrating. Yes.
Is that what that was? Is it attached to one of those electroshock things? So somebody says, yeah, your accent is spot on. He's always been good with that stuff too. And then Parallel Parking says, I remember when I moved to San Francisco in 1993, the thing that shocked me the most was the open racism towards various races. I used to say to people, you don't realize where that leads. They do now.
There you go.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Yeah, it's funny. Hey, they're actually, San Francisco, which is one of the most liberal left-wing cities in America. And it is not unheard of for someone to like throw epithets at like Asian looking people, for example. Happens all the time.
That's rough in the world.
Yeah. Hadamin says, we are fucked, but we are free.
I mean.
Steve calls it a facilitation fee.
I like whatever you want to call it. But it did make me love South Africa even more, and it did make sense even more. And then I go, at all times, we're still better than 99% of the rest of the continent. You know what I mean? In terms of just the lifestyle alone. And colored women will tell you the truth. Because you're going to go to a bar with colored people.
They will always tell you the truth
then
about
colored
everything.
Colored men will get drunk. Then somebody will start saying, yara, I saw visa applications for Canada. Yara, I saw Australia. Then in the background, somebody will just pipe up, who's going to do the ironing in Australia? Me. Who's going to clean up? Me. Mm-hmm. No, thank you. We live well here, my friend.
Does your wife like this bit of gray? Because, I mean,
She loves it. It's normally much better groomed.
It's very distinguished.
But she does love it. I'm also loving it. I can't. So my wife's a salt and pepper. You know, she's got the salt and pepper. And our rule is she's never allowed to diet because I love that salt and pepper.
But Max says, are you trying to look like Gwede Mantashe? That's not nice. He's not a please, Gwede Mantashe.
Mac, I mean, I don't know what part of me makes you think of Gwede, but
it's a beard.
Maybe
it's
you
a
must beard. No, like but you must beard. Also check your internet connection.
So your wife has the salt pepper thing. You've got this distinguished.
Yes,
and
I'm hoping it comes out even more.
This
I love
is
it.
Good, right?
I love it.
There's something about also embracing like aging gracefully, and you start to look like a wise elder at some point.
No, but I also did the research. You see, I'm 42 now. When I turned 40, I hate that I must feel about a thing the way other people felt. So I hate that there's the stigma about being 40. So then I'm all about the data. So then I asked men in their 60s what the best age was for them. So instead of asking lighties or 40-year-olds, I spoke to men in their 60s. They all basically gave me the same answer. They said, in your 20s, you are too horny and too broke to make good decisions. So then you end up making flops. In your 30s, you start to wrangle the horniness. You start to add up 1 + 1. You're basically starting to find your feet. They all said your 40s are your greatest years as a man because your mind is right. Generally, you're getting your money right and you're a good decision machine. In your 50s, your body starts to go. Your mind is still strong. And your 60s depend on how you lived your life in your 20s. Easy.
So
your
40s,
that's your legacy years as a man. The best. So then I came into the 40s excited and looking forward to be 40. You know what I mean? I'm very excited about 42.
Well, I mean, listen, you've done amazing stuff already, and I can only imagine there's more on the way. But tell me how comedy's going at the moment, because that's, you said earlier, a lot of these guys are doing extremely well, but a lot of them are doing very, very badly. And it's been tough, so, obviously, with COVID and everything.
Man, you know, artists, I think, took a major burn along with so many industries, you know, over the last couple of years. I think that, you know, comedy was in trouble in 2019 already. Mm. And if you look at comedy worldwide has generally always been linked to inherent theater culture in whichever market you're trying to play in.
Sure.
Comedy's always kind of lived off the back of that theater culture of actually leaving your home to go and see a show. And theater is dying in South Africa. So if theater is dying, that's generally a great sign to see what's happening with various other forms of live entertainment. Then there's the frustration of there are markets. So Trevor's just done the country's biggest comedy tour ever in history. It doesn't matter which comedian has
come. Does that mean biggest as in audience numbers?
Biggest as in audience numbers, but I'm saying compared to anybody in history. So where international comedians have come or local comedians have tried to do something, that is the biggest comedy tour numbers-wise ever. So Trevor benefits from the exclusivity. So yes, we all want to complain about Trevor's tickets are 1,500 Rand, but audiences won't pay 150 Rand to see me. But the flip side for artists is to be honest about the fact that your audience can see you every week for 150 Rand. They get one opportunity per year to see Trevor, which is why that, you know, that price makes sense. But when a comedian who's struggling to sell tickets at 150 Rand sees 8,000 people five nights in a row paying 1,000 Rand plus per ticket.
Like, why won't these people?
Yeah,
of course.
Then I inside little joke, you chat, the word on the street is, so Trevor pops in at Kevin Hart's show as a little opening, and then you ask Trevor, hey, how was that Kevin Hart thing? Then Trevor goes, no, it was terrible. I can't believe those people in the front were willing to pay 17,000 and they're only willing to pay 1,500 for me. So then it's a scalable problem. It doesn't matter where you are.
There's always someone doing better and there's always someone doing worse.
100%. So I think that where South African comedy is at the moment is we desperately need people to just come and watch. Just be reminded that there's no substitute for live. I believe that our comedy is more than world class. You take our top 20, put them on any lineup on earth, we're going to go toe to toe with the best. So I'm really happy about the quality of the comedy. I'm just really just, we just need people to come out and watch and make sure the industry doesn't disappear.
So you think there's still a bit of a hangover from COVID?
I definitely think there's a hangover in certain markets. I think some markets couldn't wait to get back out there, and certain markets realized how lovely their homes are.
Yeah, and people watch, you know, Netflix specials and HBO specials and all this kind of thing. And so they don't have to leave their house. They can lie on the sofa and eat.
100%. So then maybe the job is in our court in terms of how do we then make it more exciting? Because I had like this deep realization that are all comedians globally, not even just South Africans, have we all been trying to recreate Eddie's Raw and Delirious for the last 40 years? And then you go, it doesn't matter how good it is. If it's been done, it's been done. So should there be a new angle? So my new trip is unapologetically, and it's the cheesiest thing ever, motivational comedy. Just because I've been on this trip to find, like, what is the best way for Jason to live? And then to share that with an audience in the form of comedy that's more than just jokes. So I call it, wait for it, Moti Jason. Because it's motivating Jason,
but dude,
and sharing that journey with the audience. And that's where I'm at. So if you've watched me recently, you know an element is going to get
Moti
down
Jason.
To Moti Jason.
Love
I
that.
Like it. I hate that everybody says, are you doing stuff with Zunaid Moti? I'm like, no, it's my
no,
own
no,
thing.
But here's what's cool about that. And I said at the beginning is that you have this job where you love what you're doing and you're very good at it, but you also have this responsibility to pull us out of the shit because South Africans, we can get into a spiral.
Complain. Me and Siya Kolisi have that job. Please, Lord, let them win the World
please
Cup.
Please let them win.
No, because
right?
if we don't win the World Cup, the world can end.
We are going to be so depressed if we don't win. Stakes are high.
Yeah.
So when you get up there and you do comedy, you can do comedy that's just funny.
Yeah.
Or you can do comedy that's funny and motivational. In your case, you want to go for 100%. The latter.
100%.
And I think you're the perfect guy to do this because people already know that's your brand. You know, you're a very
Absolutely.
Optimistic, fun, happy guy. You've got, you are your same self, whether, you know, I meet
that's
you at a braai or whether I see you on stage. And everybody says that about you.
I appreciate that very much. And it's weird. I've got a mate who says to me often, he says, he remembers at 19, the biggest lesson I ever taught him was the fact that I'd realized at 19 that all I'm striving for is to be the same man in every room. So whether I'm with my mom, my priest, my best friend, my enemy, the same guy. There must be no, because it's difficult, and especially if you come from the communities that we came up in, where there was deep identity crisis around being coloured. You're not this. You're not that. No. You got to speak like this. Don't speak like that. You know what I mean?
You're hanging around with arms dealers for God's sake. Things have changed.
Things are different. things are different. So yes. So imagine motivational comedy, but the comedy is not diluted. Yeah. That's it. It's still hardcore. It's not fluff. No. I'll take you on any of my opinions on stage and make you laugh at them. And that's the point.
Nothing worse than a motivational speaker who's just up there to rah-rah you, and then like 5 minutes after 100%. That, people leave dejected because they're like, I want to recapture that feeling I had, but I can't.
Yes, it's that. I call it the energy drink effect, where this person hits you with a shot, you related to some of their problems, but they've given you no tools to actually apply some of this thinking to your life. And are they really relatable to you in terms of, you know, they now live this life where they, you know, have chauffeurs and Bentleys, et cetera, et cetera. Are they really relatable to you? So my thing is about going, hey guys, let's talk about some of the tools. And it was inspired weirdly the most by, I emceed a conference, and I don't read at all. I don't read at all, but I had to emcee this conference, and they gave me a book and said, if you can't get through the book, you can't host the conference because the conference is based on this leadership book. So then I listened to the audio book, and then at a whole 40 years old, I go, it's yes, I've got a lot of knowledge and experience, but the articulation of things is so important. So sometimes you're dealing with a demon that you know is there, but you don't have a name for that demon, which means the next time that demon pops up, you don't know how to identify it. And then you go through that same crisis again, instead of going, wait a minute, I've dealt with this before. This is that, maybe in a different jacket, looks a little bit different. So for me, I'm just trying to go, take myself and my audience on this journey of what is the best way to live? And it's different for all of us. It's different for all of us. So let's share, let's talk about ideas and find the bright side, because Lord knows we don't have to look hard for the dark side.
So there are two things that you just said now that ring true for me. Obviously, the whole thing is very sensible, and I'm totally with you on this. This mode adjacent thing. I'm into this. Because number one, not everybody likes to read. And reading is something that you have to do without being distracted by everything else. Yes. And these days, that's almost impossible. Especially if you have a family, if you have kids, if you have a job, if you have a phone that keeps going beep, 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 and that's your business. Yeah. Your phone and my phone and most people's phones are their business, right? So you even though a lot of it is social nonsense and you can ignore it till the end of the day, a lot of that stuff you have to respond to immediately, emails and all kinds of things. So people don't have the ability to read like they used to. And remember, reading is not actually our default setting for learning.
No.
We actually learn by listening, which is why audiobooks, and I'm glad you brought this up, because it's something that for a lot of people who are struggling because they feel they don't read enough, there's huge amounts of knowledge and information out there, but they see a fat book and they go, oh, no, I can't.
It gives me anxiety.
Right.
And this is from school days. Then, because I was under pressure, the conference I'm doing in the Drakensberg, I work out, okay, cool. I go online, I download the book, I check how long the book is going to take. Then I'm on that space where now I'm procrastinating. It's date time to leave. I still haven't started the book. So then I go, okay, how long? So then I speed it up to 1.5 times speed, which I speak to other people and they go, obviously, that's the only way to consume an audiobook because it just keeps you entertained because, you know, you get used to that pace. But now I'm in a space where I'm going, okay, I've got so many thoughts from this book. And my next release, and this is maybe an announcement right now, is to go, I want to start chatting about these books, the thinking, the influences, because we've got to start being a little bit like that old Holiday Inn saying of, you know, stop taking everybody's opinion on everything.
Absolutely.
Conscious of what you want and then take what you need and leave everything else behind. So then not the whole book is for you, but there may be a line that relates to you. Not my whole set is to motivate you, but there may be a line that's going to relate to you.
And there's nothing new under the sun. Like someone in 400 BC wrote down what you've just stumbled upon as a great philosophy right now. And you mean Herodotus wrote shit down then. You just have to find it.
Everything is in books. That's the sad part. Everything is in books. The
and humans, we always think being original is so important, right? Yeah. Especially creative people like you and me. And we think, oh, we're so creative. That's what we're being paid for. You're not.
8 billion of us. There's no more
creativity. It's putting the useful information in the right place at the right time.
Thank you.
That's a lot harder than we like to admit.
There's blood in the streets and there's opportunities everywhere.
Come on! As long as it's not my blood.
I mean, you read a lot.
Yeah, I do. I consume knowledge, but I also consume like a bunch of knowledge, especially if I like something.
Yeah.
I know everything about it. Yeah, that's why I'm so trustworthy, well, Gareth.
I'm not the one who said you're untrustworthy.
You said this. You started this fire.
Yeah, I did. All right. But you know what I like about audiobooks too, or podcasts for that matter, as long as it's someone who's, you know, like you are this morning. There's already people here saying this is the best. My abs have had a workout of note. You see,
I receive.
What you do. So when you're listening, you can be doing other things. Yeah. Like driving, for example. Yes. I find driving extremely boring, extremely irritating. I get road rage if I'm paying too much attention to the road. So if I'm listening to something, suddenly I'm peaceful.
Phenomenal.
Full of love. I'm an absolute thrill on the roads if I'm distracted by listening to something good.
The other thing, and I was a whole grown man when I realized that if you choose this audiobook life, you are feeding yourself instead of being constantly fed.
And being fed advertising.
That's what I'm saying. Because when you're being fed, you're not controlling what you eat.
Right.
But if you're feeding yourself, you control what you're putting in. So I'm saying you're probably consuming something in that time anyway.
Right.
But now you're consuming curated content that always has an objective.
Not advertising
or
messages.
Or a sponsor. Or, you know what I mean? And then if you go, I would rather consume this because this feeds me.
Right.
Has been a big revelation for me.
So what are you lining up, a couple other books to read or to listen to?
So I've done two now. So I did. I'll tell you the books. I did.
I like, by the way, you're being very honest here. Because
very honest, like,
no, guys, you don't understand. I haven't read a book in my life, and now I've done two this year.
I'm so glad you said this, because so many other people are embarrassed by the fact that they don't read, and you don't have to be embarrassed. There's a way around this.
Yes. Yes. So I've done two books this year. Before I say that, I must just say that. I come across as a reader, okay? Because I'm a back page guy. Yeah. So before, I consume my knowledge by listening. And if you were bragging about a book, Gareth, I would say to you, what is it about the book?
Mm.
So you'd take me through your lessons and I would learn vicariously through you.
Right.
What this has helped me do now is get involved and be able to form my own opinions almost from the source. So I did two Robin Sharma books.
Okay.
I did The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari.
Robin Sharma, he's terrific.
Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, Leader With No Title. Both of those books had so many big chunks that were applicable to so many of the struggles I'm going through. But more importantly, give me tools to get to the things that I know that I want. So there weren't things I was reading there that I was surprised that I actually want these things. But it's sometimes you want a thing, and then you figure out, if you just go, this is your route, start here, end there, go through the steps. So it's been an unbelievable journey for me and really helped me articulate a lot of my demons that I'm dealing with. Now I wake up with a process, you know what I mean? So I'm in the space now of trying to teach myself to wake up and first be grateful for all the things I've survived, everything that I have right now, before I click into second gear and start stressing and getting anxiety about what I haven't achieved yet and what I still have to do. And it's changed. Just that has changed my world already.
Someone told me something interesting the other day that men – you know, women bond by sharing, kind of talking about each other's life stories and hearing about what someone else has been through. Men don't connect that way. We connect by learning things from each other.
We provide solutions for each other, not empathy for pain.
But that's like, if I can teach you something, we bond.
Yes.
If you could teach me something, we bond. That's how men connect. And it's very different to women. It's also why when women tell us about something terrible that's happening in their lives or a problem, we instantly try to solve it.
Why don't you do this?
Here's an opportunity for me to teach you. So if your car broke down, here's how you – they don't want to hear that.
No.
They just want to hear the stories.
Sit in the mud with them
and
acknowledge that this is cuck. That's exactly.
So it's very different.
Very.
And you can't pretend that the two are the same.
No.
At all.
No.
A guy doesn't want to hear you just talk for an hour about your life. I mean, no real man wants, even from his best friend. Eventually he's going to go, listen, you're really pulling me down here.
Yeah.
You know, I need some Moto Jason.
Thank you.
I need some Moto Jason here. But with women, they'll do that and they connect over hours and hours talking about this one's life and that one and the children, the husband, and then this one and whatever it might be. We hate that after a while. But we want to learn and we want to teach the whole time.
Yeah.
That's how we connect. I think that's very true.
I think so too. Yeah. I think so too. How do we find the happy medium? I don't know.
So Azalea says, I audiobook or podcast while I'm busy with mundane things like driving, chores, exercise, etc.
Exactly.
Top.
Yeah, see, when I'm doing stuff around the house that doesn't require brain work, I'm always listening to something. I've got a playlist of audiobooks, podcasts, whatever.
Yeah.
And it also, because I live on my own, I never feel lonely because I've always got this voice and I'm always responding to it in my head.
Yeah.
Because funny, I heard about someone whose dad is living on his own. He's been alone for a while because his wife died a couple of years ago. And this guy doesn't talk to anyone in his neighborhood. He has no community, really, which is dangerous. You know? If you become one of those reclusive people, and I've seen it happen to people before, you lose your mind. He's actually lost his ability to formulate sentences.
Yeah, you do.
You have the opposite issue in that you are constantly perfecting the sentences to deliver the punchline.
Yeah.
It's like you are I mean, this is where, doesn't matter how many books you've read, that's pure native intelligence, if you ask me.
I receive.
It comes from your ability to craft the perfect joke, the perfect punchline, the perfect story.
A wordsmith,
that's an incredible talent. That's worth way more than knowledge.
I think I'm proof thereof.
Yeah, for sure. And that stuff, I mean, that's just something that you either have or you don't.
True story.
You can perfect it. You get better at it. But if it's not there at all, it's like not being able to sing. There's nothing.
No, 100%. But it's also like there's a difference between somebody who can sing and a singer.
Yes,
you know what
correct.
I mean?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's
yeah.
exactly the
Absolutely
same. So you can
right.
learn it, but you're never going to make somebody burst into tears by you hitting your notes. You know what I mean? Because they feel the emotion of the, and that's a singer.
Well, I've always thought that, you know, being able to do something is very different to being able to do it professionally.
Absolutely.
Or well.
Yeah.
And there are people I know who are very competent at like lots of different things, but you still wouldn't want them to be your heart surgeon.
100%.
You know what I mean? You want a heart surgeon to be more single-minded.
100%.
Jack of all trades, no, master of none.
No.
Yeah.
You kind of want that that speciality.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So here's something interesting. Wilbur Smith, says John Bad Dog, got me interested in reading. But the most valuable books I read are Thomas Sowell books. Now, Thomas Sowell is this brilliant African-American economist. Mm-hmm. He's written a ton of books all about how economies really work. He's probably one of the smartest people when it comes to modern economics that there are in the world. And he eclipses so many of the other ones. And yet so few people know who he is. So I'm glad that John Bad Dog knows about him. I can't read fiction.
You can't.
Mm-mm. I haven't tried yet, but I feel like I would be the same.
I went through the Harry Potter three times, the entire series. Went through Tolkien. I went through all of
that. Did you go through any relationships in this time? Because you went through Harry Potter. Were you going through a relationship? No. You went through Game of Thrones. Were you going through a relationship? You were going through Vaseline.
When you went through Vaseline.
No, these are
Vaseline and tissues.
I've never read Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings or Game of Thrones.
Seriously, I thought you'd be a huge Tolkien fan.
Can't.
I
watch the movies.
I love watching fiction. Love it.
Fiction, escapism. Yeah, fiction is great. Like I can even, I'm very rude about them, but I can watch the Marvel movies and just, it's escapism, right? But if I'm actually going to read, and I do read quite a lot, but I don't read fiction.
My introduction to reading was this shop CNA. It's like a myth now, right?
Yeah.
They used to have comic
books.
There
used to be a CNA. Yeah, there used to be a CNA in every shopping center.
Every
shopping center. It used to be a myth. There used to be comic books. Once a month, I used to read a Spider-Man comic because that's all I got from my mom. Once a month, Spider-Man comic book.
Not one person felt sorry for you. You still got a comic book. Every month you got a comic book.
And then in the Sunday time,
you used to get a pair of shoes a year.
And then in the Sunday time, you used to get the Super Strikers. So that's why I've got me into
Strikers in the Sunday Times.
Sunday Times. Super Strikers.
Those graphic novels, it's a big genre now.
It's huge.
Exactly.
People are making lots of money and it's very popular.
Yeah.
So that's big. Someone told me about these TikTok reading club things. One of the publishers was telling me about it the other day. They call them like TikTok books or whatever. And that's a new thing that's come up.
Book talk.
Thank you. That's exactly what it is. You're spot on. And don't ask me how to explain it because I have no idea. But apparently book talk is like a proper genre. If you go into the exclusive books now, which have taken the place of CNA, except they don't sell stationery, I don't think. You go in there. CNA sold everything.
Everything.
Envelopes.
Ah, come
board
on.
Games.
Back to school. Come on.
Yeah. All of that stuff, right? Exclusive books have a shelf now with book talk on it. Don't ask me what it is, but it looks like it's
so,
growing.
So I'm going to assume that it is instead of... So you speak about living alone. I think a lot of people live alone and don't have an opportunity to join a book club. So then you go into Book Talk. These are the trending books. You can go watch content on these books. You can do live readings of these books. Huh. So what I'm loving at the moment, and why I say that when there's blood in the streets, there's opportunity, is 10 years ago... So I complain about the fact that 10 years ago, comedians weren't competing with everything. We weren't competing with... Now you get jokes on WhatsApp. Never mind YouTube, Netflix.
Everyone
can watch any
everyone
comedian.
Thinks they're a comedian. Yes. They pass on a meme and they think they're 100%. Jason Goliath.
So now we're competing with everything. So the incentive to come and watch somebody, you know, that's actually doing it. But the flip side of that is, I think you can now stick to your niche more than ever before because you're no longer confined to that. When you're doing a live gig, you look at the 20-kilometer radius. Now you can find like-minded people around the world. Oh. So even a niche when you've got 7 billion possible friends can be a huge market. You know what I mean? So what I love is you can do Book Talk. You're alone in Kharankua and nobody wants to read. You go online, you find millions of people that have the same interest as you. There you found your community alone.
The problem is that there are some communities that you should be ashamed of themselves. There's these communities of like these sad guys who like they get into fan fiction around Star Wars and then that's all their thing.
No, but if it makes them happy sad, and keeps them out of trouble.
I don't know if it keeps them.
No, that's what I'm saying. There's the flip side.
They become very weird.
There's the flip side. Here's the flip side, but you know, two men striking a sword, let the Owens play. Whatever. You know? Who am I? Who am I? Men are being fined in Australia for pythons, let the people play with swords.
Listen, I mean, so people are bringing up all kinds of things here. Hardy Dave says, Asterix and Obelix was picture porn. I used to love just the drawings in Asterix and Obelix.
Nice.
There was so much detail in all of them that you could spend. Even though the book was thin, it was you'd get through it in 15 minutes.
But also a fat hero.
Yes, a fat hero as a kid is a good thing, right?
Like you're come related. On.
And he was so strong.
Somebody
who
wears
so
his
fantastic.
Pants like me, come on.
There we go. But I mean, I loved those. Somebody says here, I read fiction, but I've never read Harry Potter, Game of Thrones, Lord of the Rings. Never watched the movies either. Sanele.
That's so sad.
Sanele, why you haven't watched them?
Too busy being in a relationship. I'm 100% sure.
Why you give me Corabella? Really, I mean, that's just unbelievable. Vyasin says, we used to, you see, there's poverty, you know, where we compare poverty. Like he said, I only got one Spider-Man a month from my mom. And you said, I only got one pair of shoes a year. Vyasin says, we used to have to wait for our neighbors to dump their newspaper and we'd go through it and find the comics in there. I think he wins.
Listen, it is what it is, but at least you were reading with your neighbor's newspaper. We used to have to wipe our...
Jason wins. You just won.
No, you can always one-up. You know, like somebody as a comedian will say, oh, do you know, we're growing up, I had to do my homework in the garage all hours of the night. And then somebody will say, oh, you had a garage.
Very fancy.
You know what I mean? One-upping on poverty, I'm a pro.
But don't you think people have also, and this is something I've become a bit desensitized to recently, because there was a time, and I think Oprah made it very popular for people to come on and tell their sob stories. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got like something like, Pakabantu thinks his Spider-Man story is difficult.
Sad. No,
say,
everybody.
But everybody has. And what's happened is I think we've all become completely desensitized now. You know, when you turn on the TV for 90% of the time, you're going to have someone telling their boring, sad story.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we don't have time. What do they call it? Sympathy overload or something. It's where you just... I don't have time to worry about some American who gets on there and talks about how, you know, their aunt used to beat them when they used to go and stay there for a month over the summer holidays, and she whip us good. I'm like, I really don't have enough emotional reserves to also feel sorry for her, because now everyone wants their story to count.
I yearn for a time where those stories were the worst thing you've ever heard. But we're in this one-upping each other now with empathy. I mean, I did a gig, then you go, I did a gig where somebody died in their room the night before and it was so sad. Then somebody goes, I did a gig where somebody was murdered in their room the night before. Then your story doesn't even last one day in the streets. You know what I mean?
Some of this happened on Saturday. I went to this wedding and there were a whole lot of DJs there and we were talking. But I mean, it was more like making fun of...
I saw on the grams you all were looking beautiful.
The worst places we've DJ'd. So there were some funny stories there.
Well,
so the one, Abby told me she went to a place where the guy who was like organizing the gig She stayed at his house, which is so creepy. I mean, a woman on creepy. Her, right? She stayed, but his parents were away. She had the parents' room with the parents' bed, with the parents' old stained mattress and all of their shit the all over the room.
Smell of deep heat.
Exactly. All over the room, in the parents' room. And she said in the whole, the rest of the family all camped in the lounge, which was right outside her door.
So there was probably no lock.
No, so she wrapped herself in like a jacket and she said it was cold too, but she wasn't going to get in that bed that the parents, they hadn't even changed the sheets. They'd literally gone, she said that was where she stayed. The one night when she was DJing at a thing, I said to yo, that's pretty rough.
Yes, bruh.
That sounds rough, right?
Bruh, we didn't.
I mean, I know people sleep on the streets and stuff, but that sounds worse.
No, I'll tell you what's worse. We did a gig in Clare, Alice. And
that's in the Eastern Cape.
King Williamstown. Like, yeah. So we were staying, so we do the gig at University of Fort Deer. We vine out to sleep in King Williamstown, but it's late now. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. We get to the guest house. Now you're hooting outside the guest house. Auntie comes outside, bra and panty. No exaggeration. Comes outside, bra and panty, comes to the gate and says, sorry, you guys were late. I've given your room away. I've arranged another room for you. Drive to somebody else's house. Arrive now. It's a house now. Arrive. There's a car idling in the driveway, all a little bit suspicious. Get there. Somebody's just arrived and passed out before they could even switch the car out. Switch the car off. So the car's idling. Handbrake is up, but you passed out. A little bit of vomit on the shirt. Okay. You made it home. Walk inside. This is not a guest house. This is just somebody's house. And to make it feel like a guest house, we sleep in the kid's bedroom. And Donovan and I, they put two bars of Lux on the pillow just to make you feel like... Like you go in the bathroom, they had a display, Domestos Vim, just to make you feel like you are. My friend, we woke up the next morning and the mother, the auntie of the house, made us breakfast there. We had to chat to her, but she's like, no, I just got a call late last night to say somebody needs a place to stay. Now you slept on somebody's.
But you know what? You know what she's doing, that auntie? She's telling everyone, yo, they love my Jason jungle. Goliath were at my house.
Goliath and Goliath.
They love my oats.
Both of them stayed one night, and they arrived at 3 a.m.
And we haven't washed the sheets since.
And still get she rented out as a shrine. She printed pictures from the U magazine a couple of years ago, and she put them on the walls.
They used the soap.
Oh man! But listen, comedians. I've always said it's a contact sport.
Yeah.
Because you guys are one of the few professions where if people don't like what you're saying or what you're doing on stage, they tell you.
Immediately.
No one ever goes to the ballet or the opera and stands up and goes, Ah, this is cock, man.
Yeah.
Tell us again, what a lot of cock. You danced like cock. They'll never say it, but they'll do it to comedians. Very disrespectful.
No, it is, but I think it's also what makes comedians so pro each other. Like, you know, people often comment, like, compared to any other art form, comics support other comics more than anyone. And it's we call it comedy radery. Like, and it's global. So I remember I go to a festival in Canada.
That's definitely true for you. And that's definitely true for a lot of South African comics, but there's some mean ones who don't really get along. They're jealous. They're unhappy. That's in every profession, right?
Every profession, and generally you can see by the trajectory of this of their success. And I'd say for me, the truly successful guys are guys that will help you with anything. So my example is
always
I go to a festival. I'm at a bar. Dave Chappelle is next to me at the bar.
Yeah,
I take my moment to go, hey. Big fan.
Yeah.
He turns, he's nice. He then sees that it says artist on my tag, and now I'm his friend.
Right.
Immediately.
Yeah.
Immediately, because I'm at an invite-only festival, and comedians are like that. So even if you're my friend, you're a comedian, I believe you're funny, you tell me, hey, I watch this, Gareth, he's hilarious. I watch Gareth. Gareth takes it in the teeth. I still believe Gareth is funny, just had a bad day. Because I've heard from somebody who I trust that Gareth is funny. And then whatever Gareth needs, I'll help him. You want to work on a set, I'll help you.
But you've helped a lot of comedians. I mean, one of the things that, and I've spoken to you about this on the show before, is you've been extremely generous with other guys. You've helped people when they were down. I know a lot of this stuff has been happening behind the scenes. You don't even like to talk about it.
I don't like to talk about it because it was just me realizing that I'm in an industry that I can't get good on my own. I can't get as good as I think I could be. Comedy is not like music where you can listen to the same song every day. And when you do see your favorite artist, you want them to sing the song you know. So if I do a good job, I'm creating an audience not to watch me again next week, but an audience that wants to consume more comedy next week. Mm. So if I make sure I'm surrounded by comedians who can bat, that's the only way to expand my audience in the live space. So the reason I don't like to talk about it is because a lot of it was, you know, a lot of the stuff I've done for the industry and for other comedians was in some way, shape or form, because I knew that in terms of what I want to get out, we need...
Listen, there's no such thing as pure altruism.
Yeah.
Right? There's no such thing. And people who tell you that they're truly altruistic are the ones you got to be the most careful of.
Yeah, true story.
Those are dangerous people.
Yeah.
But in your case, and I'm saying it as a third party, if you weren't here, I'd say it anyway, so you don't have to respond.
Are we?
But I think there are a lot of people in comedy and even in the broader entertainment industry who are very grateful to you for having been a generous and kind person in times where they probably needed it. And I know some of these stories. I'm just letting everybody else know, because you're a good guy.
I receive.
This thing of I receive, you've said it a couple of times. That's a skill you have to learn. Some people have to learn. Taking a compliment.
I'm still learning.
And that's why I say but you're doing it.
No, but
you're
I say it so consciously, but it's I'm very, conscious
it's
that I'm
It's very
learning.
Important to do that. I mean, like, it took me a long time to just say thank you.
Yes.
And when someone says something nice.
Yeah.
And you obviously are practicing this now.
I'm doing my best. And also it's because I'm practicing it because I like complimenting people. And I get annoyed when the people I compliment don't take it. And then I'm like, no, but then don't be the same.
But also, isn't your default setting to make fun of things, to laugh it off, to have a bit of like a less serious moment at any given opportunity than a serious one?
100%.
So it's even harder then for you to, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And let's move on. Instead of just entertain the crowd.
I just wish that we were equipped with what to do when somebody goes, you're such a nice guy. Because I want to go, but what am I supposed to be? Like, I don't understand.
I used to say to people, again, partly because I'm also not good at taking these compliments, they'd say, oh, you're much nicer than I thought you'd be. I'd go, well, then that just means you're a bad judge of character. But don't make that about me, right? Oh, dude, it's so good. And it's so nice to catch up with you. Everybody's saying in here, absolutely love the show. This has been a great show, says Gene. Thank you.
Gene, let me plug myself now. So Gene, thank you so much. I saw another one about complimenting me about being a storyteller. I receive and I appreciate that so much.
Roxanne.
So Goliath and Goliath are doing a weekend of comedy at the Lyric Theatre at the end of the month.
Nice.
My one man show is on Sunday 4:30. So Lyric Theatre. Tickets are, I should know this, but I think
get
the tickets, follow me on social media. I'll be posting about it this week, but I've got a one man show.
Here's his handle,
and if you're interested in this motivational comedy and to see what the style is and what the vibe is, and to see if I can keep my promise of I'm not diluting the comedy experience, then come through 4:30 Sunday the 1st of October, Lyric Theatre. It's gonna be a lach, and I'm coming with the things.
Listen, so lucky to see you. And thank you for coming in and being our surprise guest this morning.
Thank you for having me.
You've changed the whole path of my day. I was going to have a shit day, but now I can't.
Tell her what you must.
All day, every day.
You've made it. You've motored Jason.
You've been motored Jason. Motor Jason. Consider yourself motored Jason.
It's a verb. It's an adjective. I'm trying to figure it out. It's all
of
those things.
The best part about it is I needed a word to figure out what am I doing every day? All these, like you said, I do a lot of things. Can I have one word where all the things I do in some way reflect that? So whether I'm emceeing, whether I'm doing stand-up, whether I'm facilitating, whether I'm acting, as long as it's in line with motivating myself, I hope in some way it will motivate my audience. So it's my word. Moti Jason doesn't need to work for the world, but it needs to be my holding word to be clear on what my mission is.
It works. It's already working. So there we go. You heard about the show. Go and follow him on social media, and you can go to the show live and see him on stage doing Motor Jason. It's very good. Jason Goliath, such a pleasure.
Thank you, dude. Big love. Salute.
Thanks, dude. Bye-bye. Cheers, everybody. See you tomorrow. CliffCentral.com.